Hello to all of my audio listening friends out there. Wanted to drop a quick disclaimer that this episode, I recommend you watch the video version when you can, because it's full of visuals and pictures and videos of the things that we're talking about that really add a lot of color to the conversation. So I will include a link to that in the description below if you can. And if you are a hardcore audio maximalist, I've also included the links to all the visuals in the description, so you can just pull them up when you can later. Highly recommend that. Also, the video version includes an extra 20 minutes of bonus content full of a bunch of clips and other videos that I found relevant to this conversation that I think are really interesting, and they just wouldn't really make sense in audio version. So, yep, I'll include those links below, and enjoy the episode, friends. All right, friends, thank you so much for joining me today for another episode of the Ben Werman podcast. Really appreciate you being here. Today, we're going into a really fascinating topic that has come out of nowhere. And I did an episode about Tartaria with Scott Dietles recently. I still have it in the recording playlist, but after I finished it and looked back on it, I was kind of thinking, you know, I need to bunch up a couple of these together because there's no way to get all of this content into just one episode. So I found this gentleman, Lucius Aurelian from YouTube, who has a really fascinating channel where he goes, you know, just looks at all these different cities all over the country and the world and is just thinking that maybe there's a different version of history that we were never told. And I think it's a really fascinating topic to look into. So Lucius, I guess I'll refer to you as Lucius. Thank you so much for joining me, sir.
Well, I appreciate you having me here, and it is a delight to appear on your podcast.
Excellent. Well, why don't we start off with just a brief background of you and what brought you into this fascination with history and diving through this rabbit hole of tying up loose ends that just don't seem to make any sense?
It all started when I was originally a history professor at an unnamed Midwestern university for about 15 years, and I kept noticing that there were a variety of discrepancies in all the lesson plans that we had. But if you want to know what really started it, it was when I was actually writing my thesis on, did Charlemagne, Charles the Great, emperor of the Carolingian Empire and initiator of the Holy Roman Empire, know about his coronation? And I couldn't help but think, who was actually cataloging this? And why am I writing a thesis statement on what somebody knew over 1,000 years ago? That's what really started everything.
Excellent. That's a great intro. So Tartaria is the way that or the old world. We kind of hear Tartaria and old world as these sort of words to describe this new theory that's coming out that more and more people are latching onto and becoming obsessed with and really, you know, going through this rabbit hole, as we call it. So why don't we start with, this might be a really hard question, we'll see, but you're a history professor, so I'm going to give you a hard question. How would you summarize the last 1,000 years or so from a status quo perspective and what we're currently taught as what happened? And you can go as far back as you want to recently, as far back as you think would be a good sort of, you know, way to summarize the current view of history as you used to teach it in school and as everyone is taught in school. And after that, we'll go into this different idea that we have.
Well, there's one central component behind it, and that is, what is our understanding of history based on? Our understanding of history is based on what other people tell us. We did not personally experience that history. It all starts right there. Because it's what you're told from the moment you're born, the moment you have conscious identity and understanding, people impose upon you an understanding of history. Now, just because it's imposed, it doesn't necessarily mean it's incorrect. That's not the initial decision point right there. But once you start to step back and think about that, you realize, who actually experienced these events that they're telling you about? Because the first thing you'll find out about any historian, I'll just use one of the most famous historians, Mary Beard, who is considered the foremost expert on the Roman Empire. The issue is, Mary Beard did not live until well over a couple thousand years after the Roman Empire fell. Or if we're being generous and we're considering Byzantine or the Byzantine Empire, which was the Eastern Roman Empire, but they didn't actually call it that, the Byzantine Empire, that name was attached later. You start to understand how this gets very confusing. And you start to realize that there is no single historian that actually lived through the times that they are talking about and telling you that they know everything about firsthand. And once you understand that basic disconnect, you suddenly come to this realization that that makes everything that we've been told, everything we understand about history, from really any point in time, a lot more fluid than we might like to think. In other words, it's not as concrete. Because somebody told me about what happened in Rome 2,000 years ago, that doesn't mean those are the exact sequence of events that happened in Rome. Now, that's not to say all of it is to be tossed aside, but it causes that basic mentality of questioning. And then when you start to go further with the questioning, when you start to try to make logical conclusions, when you try to connect history based on cause and event, it becomes very problematic. It's interesting that they don't teach history in the concept of cause and event. They teach it as a sequence of events that occurred during this particular time frame. And then when you have it isolated into different study groups and areas, for example, you can break history down by a time frame. That's typically most proper. Yes, I studied medieval time frame. What is the medieval time frame? It's the Dark Ages, 500 to 1500, but we're going to redefine it. You suddenly realize that this entire understanding we have of it is really a lot more fluid, that people are talking about events that they did not witness. They are talking about events that they reference from books that the people who wrote those books did not witness and could not witness. And so once you start to understand that, you realize there's something rather, how shall we say, bizarre going on with our understanding of it. And once you've studied it long enough, you can also see how the current understanding of history is even reshaped in the moment. For example, events that you personally witnessed, let's just say 5 years ago, have been very distinctly reshaped and changed. The understanding of what happened is changed. And once you see that, once you realize and witness that happening in real time, right in front of your eyes, you understand that what happened in the past is a lot more fluid than you can ever begin to realize. Now, it's not to say that you just completely throw away everything that you've been told or you understand, but you gain this understanding that it's not this, yes, we are certain that this happened. We know that Charlemagne knew that he was going to be coronated. We know what he was thinking. How the hell do we know what anybody's thinking? Well, we are going to make you understand that, yes, we do. And you're going to believe that we understand it. And therefore starts the process of never questioning that which you were told. And that is the basic mentality of how alternative research operates.
Yeah, so many good points there. And one of the things that you mentioned that I think is so relevant, especially to my audience, because we are talking a lot about how there's so many things we've been lied to about just in the last few years, let alone 100 years or 1,000 years. So how could anyone honestly believe that, you know, everything that we're hearing about the past could be completely correct? It's obviously not. Like, it gets harder and harder the longer time there is. It's like it's the longest game of telephone ever. We've all played telephone as kids, where people are passing the message along. And this is like the ultimate version of that, where there's just no chance that it's perfect. The question is, how wrong is it? And we know that history is always written by the victors. And there have been a whole lot of conflicts, wars, things being replaced here and there, the conquering. And so it's just a giant mess. And I think that that's a good sort of foundation for people to start from, is to just try your best to wipe your mind clean of the history that you thought was true just because you read it in a textbook. We have this weird human nature where if we read something in a very official looking textbook in a school, which is supposed to be teaching us things, we just believe that that must be true because that is what the authority figure is instilling in us. And it just gets kind of stuck into our psyche. And most of us don't go on to become historians. We do other things, and we sort of just have that in the back of our mind as a constant that we believe is true, but it's not, because of all the reasons we just explained. So I guess a good question I would have for you is, what were the things that you started noticing specifically, if you remember, that started putting up red flags in your brain that started to get you to look in a different direction?
Well, I would go back to the classic example of Rome, because according to the official history, Rome has been rediscovered multiple times in the past. So there was the rediscovery of Rome in the Dark Ages. There was the rediscovery of Rome that led to the Renaissance. There was the rediscovery of Rome in the 1700s that led to this architectural preference to go back to Greco-classical architecture. You know, so really what you're seeing is all these explanations, we're always pointing our finger back to Rome. Yes, everything can be traced back to Rome, all of our architectural history and everything that we did and why we build the way that we do. And it's just one of many indicators. Once you really start to step back, you see this in many different places. And it's interesting because there's a lot of people who want to try to limit this field of research and just say, well, all it is buildings, antiquitech, and that's really all there is to it. There's nothing more beyond it. You know, I can't believe that you would actually try to find examples or references in films and books, but you realize that all people are trying to do is keep you to look in that same old box that you've always been looking in. But when you start to really open your mind, you see that it's everywhere. It's all around you. It's in video games. It's in films. It's in novels. It's referenced here and there. It's in the news every single day. Although, you know, we can certainly discuss what it is to actually listen to journalists and the basic process of how society is set up, that only scientists and historians are the people that are certified to tell you the difference between a legitimate conspiracy and a conspiracy theory. You're certainly not supposed to think on conspiracy and conspiracy theories yourself. No. But of course, neither are journalists, but they are authorized to tell you what the current conspiracy theories are for the day. And then looking at it in hindsight, the authority figures, scientists and historians, certified ones, you know, which changes back and forth, they will tell you what actually happened and why it happened after the fact.
And this is so familiar. We hear it in every single industry. You know, one of the ones we talk about in the health sphere is like, oh, the doctors and the scientists are they're the gods, that you must listen to them and they're right about everything, when we know that they were really just bought and paid for, and, you know, just repeating lies that they've been told in all sorts of different areas. And the same in another area that we explore in this podcast, which is the financial side. And we have these central bankers and the Federal Reserve chairs that come out and, you know, they do this weird ritual of saying how much money is going to cost and like what the Federal Reserve rate is going to be and interest rates. And they are like the gods of the sphere, and they really are just, you know, pieces of this huge machine. And so it's becoming much more common for people, as rightly so, to just question these authority figures, because they are really just part of a much bigger game. And the same is true for the historians. And when we turn on a History Channel, we see these, you know, people with fancy titles under their names, what they're talking about. Like they are really just working off of what they've been told as well. And as we said, like, this is a huge game of telephone. There's a lot of questions. So I think that's a pretty solid foundation for people to just wipe the slate clean and start looking at this idea of Tartaria, which is this word is sort of slapped onto this whole theory. And it does refer to a place that people like you and increasingly myself believe was this massive global empire that was completely forgotten. And this is where things start getting really weird. So could you just give us a 101 overview? If you just walked into the elevator with someone, you have, you know, a few minutes to explain this theory that we have of Tartaria, how would you give the broad overview?
Well, I know it's traditionally associated with the word empire, because let's be honest, that's a very flattering word and that gets used a lot in history. And yes, it may well have been an empire at some point, but I prefer the term civilization, because what I think we really understand is it's a discarded civilization. You know, we like to say lost civilization. And again, you know, we're going back and forth with buzz terms. And in fact, I'll even admit it, Tartaria and Old World are the current buzz terms. But the reality is, alternative research has been around a lot longer than we like to think. It's just now we have many more means of expressing it. There's other independent means of communicating and sharing the ideas. But it's not that it didn't exist in the past. It's just in the past, it was, how should we say, a lot more formalized. It was a lot easier to discredit. Immanuel Velikovsky writes Worlds in Collision, and suddenly he's the straw man to be zapped and picked apart by people like Carl Sagan and all the quote-unquote legitimate scientists and historians. And that's how it worked in the past. This is a silly book. These theories are crazy. Venus couldn't have come out of Jupiter. You know, I mean, we're not even getting in the whole shape of the land and everything. But to answer your question, Tartaria, civilization in the past that is not referred to at all in history. It is discarded. In other words, there is to be no understanding and no awareness of the civilization. What remains of it, the structures, any evidence that we can still see out there, it needs to be attributed to other civilizations. And of course, the most popular one tends to be the Roman civilization. That's what everything gets attributed to. The Romans were around for a very long period of time, 1,000 years, 1,500 years, 2,000 years, depending on which portions of the quote-unquote Roman Empire and Republic you're talking about. But you have this idea of Tartaria. It is really just a name. We have no idea what this civilization was actually named. We don't even know what their society was really like. There's a lot we don't know about them. And really that comes into conclusion when you compare the evidence, because you see that there's all these symbols that don't make any sense. For example, you'll see that there's this Roman architecture or Greco-Roman architecture. You know, again, we have the different names to try to associate expectations. For example, take any state capital in the United States. It looks like it's something that's out of Rome. For example, if you look at the state capital of Des Moines or of Iowa in Des Moines, Iowa, and you look at the nearby Soldiers and Sailors Monument, you could be forgiven for believing that you're actually looking at something right out of Rome, because it looks like Trajan's column in front of a basilica or a church right behind it. And so you suddenly realize that that similarity of architecture is not just limited to the geographical areas that you think it is. It's all over the place. It's all over the land or the world or whatever you want to think of it as, all over the populated continents. And then when you start to step back and you see that there's these symbols, these representations that appear everywhere in places they shouldn't appear. For example, a state capital in Iowa in the United States, constructed in the late 1800s. Why do they have the pantheon of Greek and Roman deities painted all over the place and in statues? Was there just some sort of obsession with it in the 1800s? And there's this odd explanation by saying, well, they rediscovered Roman architecture, you know, for the fifth time in the 1700s. And so everybody wanted to build that way. And that's how the explanation for it tries to take root. But you never get an explanation for why you have these reoccurring symbols. Why does the mythical griffin appear everywhere? And it's a lot more common than we realize. Why do we see this very unique stylized owl? And these two symbols aren't associated with anything in the United States or any of the states, really. And that's just one of many different examples. And so you realize that there seems to have been a civilization that's represented by this architecture, by its symbolism, that does not conform with our understanding of what we've been informed the history really is. And so what is Tartaria? It is a way to understand the civilization, but it is not the only way. So was this a worldwide civilization? Possibly. Was this certainly a very influential civilization? Yes. And did they have a society that operated very differently than ours? There's a lot of indications that it did. Do we have any idea of how it operated? No. Was it a utopia? Probably not, because it did fall. But could it have reached more advances than we currently have? Yes, there's a lot of evidence of that. And so that's why it's very compelling to us. Now, did it go through its time of rise and fall of its ascendant and descendant? Yes, there's evidence of that as well. There's different indications of levels of architectural capability that we do not even attempt today. But we can see in the past that there seems to have been much elevated capability compared to what we have now. And yet no one can ever account for the logistical achievements based on what we understand the limitations to have been in the 1800s. And so really, when you hear Old World and Tartaria, it's interchangeable terms to explain and understand what this civilization was, what its capabilities may have been, and what its society may have been like. And yes, absolutely, it's based on a lot of theory and a lot of speculation, because the actual factual data, it's omitted, it's lost, or it's just simply not present.
Yeah, and I think this general idea of us current humans in 2025 not being the most technologically advanced that humans have ever been is becoming a little bit more mainstream now. One name that I'm sure you know that has been pushing this out all over the place with Joe Rogan and a Netflix series is Graham Hancock, basically talking about how, you know, there used to be a much more advanced civilization. I think he goes back about 15,000 years or so, and pointing at these weird artifacts that just don't align with the narrative that we're given. And I would say my view of this Tartaria idea is that it was actually much more recent than that, that we could have had like a really advanced civilization that we don't know about. So would you say the same, that there are some similarities between these different tracks, but they all kind of come back to there was a more advanced civilization before us and we have proof of it? And maybe you could talk a little bit about what proof you think there is that is most compelling to you.
Well, I am under the mindset that it is a lot more recent. I mean, the issue is we just don't know I mean, for us, we can't even personally verify the events that happened before our own lifetimes. I mean, yes, we can certainly trust our parents and trust our grandparents. And I'm always amazed at all the people who seem to come out of the woodwork and say, you know, my grandparents told me that they walked by that building while it was being built. You know, and it's, of course, it's always in very general terms. There's never anything specific or detailed, or they try to claim a family lineage back to the 1400s. Yeah, I have a family lineage back to the 1400s. But you know what it is? It's a printed piece of paper that was written in a 1980s font that says that my family history goes back to the 1400s. What the heck does that even prove? Well, cemeteries, they prove everything. All right. Well, then we should have a lot more cemeteries all across Europe, then, shouldn't we? You know what we do have in Europe? We do have catacombs with lots of skeletons in them. Millions of skeletons underneath Paris, France. Where exactly do those come from? Well, those were those catacombs that they built in the Middle Ages. Oh, in the Middle Ages, when everybody was dying of plague and virtually nobody could read, yet we had all these capabilities to do these things. And so you start to see there's all these inconsistencies that really add up about the official history. And you suddenly start to gain the understanding that, yes, these events could have transpired a lot more recently than we like to think. We even have to question the passage of time, because the other thing that's imposed upon us is the passage of time, the perception of time. Sure, we can all see that there's different seasons depending where we live, but how long was a year counted in the past? Was a year counted in the same way in the past? For example, if I just counted a single season as a year, but I didn't actually define that, but then I wrote it in my record, 22 years passed. But in reality, for us, only 6 years passed, or 4 years. In other words, the standard definition unit for time could have changed without us even being aware of it. That's just one example. The other thing to think about is how many different versions of calendars that we have across the land. How did all these calendars develop, and where did they come from, and why do we have so many calendars? Well, we have different civilizations, we have different societies, we have different languages. Ah, yes, we do. And why exactly do we? But then, conversely, we have this global community. We have this idea of a global community. There's a big difference, though, between practical reality and ideas. And we find that we live in a world where ideas are used to pull us a lot more than practical reality. But when you look at the practical reality, somebody built these buildings, somehow they were done, and somehow they were done in a very recent period of time because they all look very clean and very new, and they're also enduring. Because let's be honest, you want to get a house built today, you're going to be lucky if the house even lasts 30 years to pay off your 30-year loan. But yet in the past, in the 1800s, when the United States was still being settled, you have houses that were constructed by people who were just digging their living out of the land, and yet those houses still endure to this day. And so it becomes very problematic to understand and know. Now people explain it away. They say, well, people just worked harder in the 1800s. Okay, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. There weren't any labor unions. All right. And there were no safety standards. Okay, let's just take that one. If there's no safety standards, you got people dying every day on a work site. You still have to supply the people that are operating on a work site. You still have to logistically support the materials. And we're not talking about cheap wood. We're talking about massive stone foundations. You have to dig out the foundation. You have to put what they tell us is limestone or all these other construction materials to build these incredible palaces, whether it's a state capital, a church, a cathedral, a house, a hotel. We've looked at everything on my channel. And we've seen that there's all these different examples of these structures that were constructed a lot more recently than we like to think. But were they? Or some of them much older? We just don't know. I think what you see happening, and you know, I'm not going to poke people in the eyes too much here, but there seems to be an acceptance for going, how shall we say, more mainstream with certain alternative theories, so long as they can be a little bit more easily discredited. You know, I use the term straw man. Well, we've got a lot of straw mans out there that are supposed to be discredited. Now, I'm not going to say that Graham Hancock is a straw man at all. No, not at all. Any more than Emmanuel Velikovsky was. But this alternative research has always been with us. And so I believe that what we have here is examples and evidence of a civilization that existed a lot more recently in our past than we're led to believe. We're not talking about timelines of 15,000 years or things like that for this civilization that's been discarded. It could have only been 100 years, 150 years. Maybe it was more, maybe it was less. And who knows what the civilization really looked like. Maybe they had structures that were really around for hundreds or even thousands of years. I mean, how do you go around explaining St. Peter's Basilica in Rome? something that was built in 120 years just after the Renaissance, a structure we could never build today, and it is still the largest church in the world to this day. But then you go nearby to Milan and look at the Basilica there, and they say it took them over 600 years to build that one. Yeah, from 1300 to 1965, they try to say. That's how long they spent building a single church. Really? But you start to see those kind of inconsistencies and how things don't make a lot of sense, and you realize you have to step back and come to your own conclusions because the people that are telling you that they know beyond any shadow of a doubt don't really seem to know because it doesn't stand up to any sort of scrutiny. And that's the mainstream account of history. It does not stand up to scrutiny. So is Graham Hancock wrong? No, he might well be talking about a civilization that did exist, what we think of as 15,000 years ago. But it might have been a couple more civilizations before ours. It's very interesting, too, depending on what time of the day it is, what time of the year it is, what you're allowed to talk about, and what you're not, how shall we say, encouraged to talk about.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things that you bring up there that I'd love to bookmark for a little bit later is just this idea of cycles and how there were many cycles of rise and fall before us. And many of them, multiple, probably got above technological advancement that we're at right now. So we're just one of many of these different cycles that have occurred through history. And each time it happens, it just gets wiped clean, but leaves little remnants of the past so we can look for like a treasure hunt and try to find these clues. And I have I pulled up a couple of pictures here while you were talking there that I'm going to do a screen share on. And for people listening on audio, I'll include links to all these if you want to look. But basically, first I'm going to bring up this picture right here. Do you see my screen okay?
Yep, got it just fine.
This is basically a picture of a giant Capitol building, like you talked about, just massive, reaching the sky. And in front of it is a little horse in a carriage. And so basically, the story that we were told in a nutshell is that this technology of horse and buggy is what built these massive structures full of, you know, millions of pounds of marble and, you know, perfectly carved. That just doesn't make sense when you actually stop to think about it, because, you know, we're always told, oh, it was like a chisel, you know, they just chiseled. And like you said, they just cared much more about it. And they, you know, they worked really hard. That doesn't really make sense to me when you actually stop. And one of the buildings that was actually brought to my own attention when I was going through this is my own home state of Washington, up in the Northwest, the Olympia Capitol building, which is a place I went to in my fourth grade class as a field trip. That's a perfect example right there in my own backyard of this building, just massive domed building that supposedly was built hundreds of years ago when our technology was, you know, some rocks and chisels and some cowboys running around with horses. And it just doesn't really add up. And
so, well, you know what?
Go ahead.
Go back to that one real quick.
Yeah.
So you've got the United States Capitol right there. Here's just a couple questionable points behind, you know, and that's a wonderful picture because you've got the horse-drawn trolley car there instead of just an open cart with wider wheels, because for some reason it was easier to build large trolley cars and have horses haul them around. That's point one on that. Point two with the U.S. Capitol, did you know that they renovated the United States Capitol? It actually had a different dome. And you can find pictures of it. It's very bizarre because these pictures look very bizarre. But they actually inform us that they completed the renovation and restructuring and building the entire new dome during the United States Civil War. So during the Civil War, when the United States was divided into, was fielding its first national army, its largest army ever fielded, and it had money committed to that, they still had money to renovate the dome. By the way, the Confederate capital, the enemy, really wasn't that far away, and they were actively threatening Washington, D.C. during the war. But they expect us to believe that during that time, they completed this renovation and built a dome that nobody would attempt to build today during the United States Civil War. So while they were busy fighting a war, putting all their resources into that, they had the resources to renovate and build this brand new dome. That's what they expect us to believe. Because that's what the history says, and nobody questions it. That's just one image. That's one example. And let's not even talk about what they did with the columns that they took from the original Capitol because they're in a park that's nearby. It's insane and hilarious. But yes, we had horses that pulled around trolley cars on tracks because, well, that's just how it evolved. You know, it's not because we found the tracks with the trolley cars there and had no means to propel them, and all we had were animal power. Even though that's what it looks like, but, you know, my eyes may be deceiving me.
Yeah. I mean, just major inconsistencies when you just try to think about logically how, you know, the technology that people had in that period that these things were supposedly built just does not match with what you're actually seeing with your eyes, and let alone walking inside these buildings. Like, I recommend anyone out there who has these Capitol buildings nearby, or, you know, these other just massive structures, to walk inside and just look at what's in there. And it's just incredible craftsmanship everywhere you see that, like you said, we don't see that anywhere now. And you talk to any builder, they'll be, oh yeah, we can't make that now. And that's sort of another thing that we hear about a lot of these different, like, history questioning rabbit holes. For example, another one is the moon landing. Like, oh yeah, yeah, we don't have the technology for that anymore. And yeah, you know, we hear these weird things said, like, why don't we have it anymore? It doesn't make sense. You know, where did it go? And it makes you start asking questions. And the second picture that I pulled up here really goes right along with your how you talked about so many of these things are being dug out of the ground that we're seeing. And you know, this is another thing we see in cities all over the country right now, is that, you know, people are seeing windows that are just sticking out of the ground in a weird way on certain buildings. And it doesn't make much sense that people would build into the ground or dig into the ground and build something in there. It seems more like there was what the people in this community call the mud floods, which is basically a huge cataclysmic event that covered all of these things with mud and buried them all. And so all we really see for a lot of these buildings is just the tippy top of them. We just haven't, you know, gotten into looking further underneath the ground. Is there some elaboration you could maybe add on to that?
Well, that's probably one of the most, how shall we say, dramatic forms of evidence. Now, what I've witnessed happen in the last 10 years as more and more people become aware of this is what's been the response to it. There's been a couple different responses. You know, usually the most popular response is, okay, more people are questioning things, so we need to address things more mainstream. Now, this did happen in the past. Back in the 1970s, when there was a lot of distrust in the government and what was being informed to the people, which coincidentally was when the United States government said they were turning away from the Apollo space program because they just arbitrarily said, people aren't interested in it. We went to the moon and now there's nothing left to do. So we're going to go to the space shuttle and make money off it. To hell with the Apollo program and forget about Saturn V. Forget about the F1 engine. We're just going to burn the technology in the fire, and that's that. And that's what the official history says happened. But the response that you'll see is, okay, we have this person who's more or less accepted by the mainstream, or we're going to set up a TV show. In the 1970s, they had Fingerprints of the Gods, they had In Search Of, hosted by Leonard Nimoy, Spock himself. And that's where they were willing to let people, how shall we say, entertain other explanations for what may have happened in the past. You know, they talk about Nan Madol, they talk about Easter Island, the fact that there are no modern means to actually reproduce the mighty statues, the heads, the Mori of Easter Island. Just one example, there's many of them. And so what you'll see happen then is people will ask these questions, and then over time, it'll be neglected, and then everyone will be sort of shepherded back to where they're supposed to think. And then, of course, there'll be another release later in time, and all right, we're going to let you look at things with alternative explanations, but eventually, okay, yeah, it's not going anywhere, so just forget about it. And oddly enough, if you've been around long enough, you'll see that's the cycle too. That, you know, it's not really going anywhere, what's the point? I may as well just believe what I'm told, because that's the path of least resistance. And oddly enough, that approach is actually quite effective, because, you know, people just want to live their lives, and, you know, as long as the trains are on time and you got 3 square meals a day and you don't have to worry about too much, you're content. It's oddly enough not even an authoritarian approach, just simple human nature. You can allow people to forget about things, and a lot of times people are content to forget about things because it's easier. But when you look at these images,
I would say, like, this is, we also see all these different ways that they're poisoning us through the fluoride in the water, the spraying in the sky, the food being reduced to chemical slop that just shuts your brain off, on top of the inflation that's being pushed on everyone through fiat currency. All of these things are shrinking people's brains, making them less able to physically think about things more. And so I really believe it really all ties into that. That's intentional, because if people really start becoming enlightened and asking questions about these things, that's when things will start to unravel from the official narrative.
Well, and, we say narrative, but I mean, you could even say, what's the story of the day? That's the way I like to look at it, because, we get a new story of the day, and now with attention spans being reduced, now we can say a new story of the minute. Hey, what's going on now? Okay, better check the news. There's going to be something else that broke out in 5 minutes. Now, granted, cycles have been shortened quite extensively. And I mean, when I was originally learning in academia, the big controlling fear mechanism was the threat of nuclear conflict. That was thrown in people's faces every day. There's going to be a nuclear war. It's East versus West, and it can happen in 6 to 20 minutes. That's all the time it'll take for those intercontinental ballistic missiles, and you'll just be done. So you may as well be scared. There's nothing you can do about it, though. Just be scared and follow authority. Even though in all the nightmare scare films that they made about it, what'd you see authority doing? Nothing to really help the people. But that was always the point. They don't have any issue showing that, yeah, we're not going to do anything to help you, but you're still going to rely on us, because what other choice do you have? It's oftentimes that simple, and it's frightening in a way how simple it really is. The other thing we've seen is now everything's referred to as AI, the whole concept of artificial intelligence. But do we actually have any artificial intelligence? I mean, science fiction looked at artificial intelligence in the 20th century, and it was sentient. It had self-awareness. None of this stuff that we're being told is artificial intelligence is that artificial intelligence that we thought of. Well, it's just deep learning. It's the ability to do more analytics. It's the ability to take inputs and generate different outputs. Oh, you mean a program? Because that's really all it is. It's still a program. It's just now we have a fancy new name for it. And, it's AI this, AI that. We can generate images, because, it's like we couldn't generate images or special effects in the past. This is brand new. Yeah, sure, okay. But that's all it is. It's expectation management. You put that expectation in people's minds. That picture you got right there. Is that a real image? Was the previous picture of the Capitol picture a real image? You don't even know anymore. You're not even sure. Because there's been so many images that have suddenly appeared, and yes, it is questionable. For example, there was a lot of focus on the World's Fairs, and to be honest with you, there was limited images available on the World's Fairs. But in more recent time, there's been more images that have suddenly popped up. Oh, well, we searched these archives, and now we have these new images. The United States Civil War, for example. Prior to Ken Burns' little documentary about the Civil War that came out back in 1990, so, short 35 years ago, there really weren't that many pictures that were available of the United States Civil War. But all suddenly, we found all these pictures, and here they are in this program, and we're going to pan and scan with the camera while we have these famous actors narrate it or read off diaries to really show you that, yes, the Civil War happened. It's really, really weird how the perception of the Civil War has changed in the United States from before that movie in 1990 and after.
Yeah, and that's one of the things I learned from watching your channel, was one of your videos about the Civil War. And that sort of blew my mind right there, that there were no pictures of the actual battles happening. And the question is, why? Of course, we had photography back then. If we would have been taking pictures of these historical events, so why weren't there? And, it really just brings us back to needing to start with a foundation of the things that we can physically see and touch and witness. And I just brought up this other building here. Maybe you know what it is. I don't know the name of it.
That's the Cathedral in Milan, the Duomo, or Duomo. I'm probably mispronouncing it because I go to many different languages and I mispronounce things all the time, and I just make fun of myself for it. But that's the one that they spent 600 years building. But get this, it's not as large as St. Peter's Basilica in Rome. I mean, it's still in Italy. This isn't in Rome. This is in Milan. And yet they say they spent 600 years building that, but they were able to build a larger one in Rome in only 120 years. I guess, you have the papacy behind you and they've got the power of prayer. And, maybe they should just say that is the legitimate explanation. We prayed and, it was divine intervention, and that's how the structure is really there in 120 years. They may as well just say that. It would have more credibility in my mind. So
No power tools, no electricity, just rock and chisel and some horses built that. Okay.
Yeah. Well, both of them. I mean, they're both crazy, impossible structures. Nobody would even attempt to design something like that today. But we're just supposed to accept that, yes, during a time when there were plagues, during a time when a vast portion of the population was illiterate, sure, they could just pull this off. Well, you know, they had those Roman highways that they had built 2,000 years ago that were still there. That explains it. Oh, criminy.
Yeah. And just the level of design and precision that we see, not only is it just impossible based on what we're told about the technology of the time, but it also shows that just the spiritual enlightenment and the care for beauty and the just rising consciousness of these people have to have been just something we can't even comprehend today. Because like you said, we're told about like the Dark Ages, and we're told about how terrible things were and people had no technology. We had no Uber Eats, so it must have really sucked. But what we're seeing here is that something that doesn't match up with that at all. It seems like people were really on a much higher level than we are today. And it just begs the question. I mean, looking at these designs here, what do you think was the mental state of these people that were building these things that apparently had none of this technology we have today? And like, I don't even know how to frame this question. It's just, it's so crazy that this is, well, when you start thinking about this, it's like, of course they were much higher and more technologically advanced than us.
This is really where you're looking at the crux of the question in terms of how different were these people? Because if we really step back and think about this, we're talking about a difference in capability that is completely beyond our ability to even imagine now. And yet everybody accepts this, that, well, yes, these incredible cathedrals, these amazing Rosicrucian windows that we're looking at, all this geometric precision. Of course, this was done in medieval times during the Middle Ages, because that's what the official history tells us. And for most people, that's where it stops right there. But, you know, going past the whole modified images, many of these structures you need to go look at in person today. And you don't have to go to Italy. Like you said, you can go to your own backyard. It's all right there, wherever you are in the land. Go to your county courthouse. Go to your local state capital. Go to these near structures. Go to the churches or the basilicas or the mosques or whatever, any kind of religious building. And, you know, we also try to associate things with, well, this particular culture, that particular culture, because, you know, that's just what we do. It's cultural appropriation when they tell us it is, but it's not cultural appropriation when they tell us it is as well. So, you know, I guess other people get to tell us how to think and how to be. But however you look at it, you cannot explain this. Who would actually put the time into doing this? Who would do it today? And who would do it yesterday when, as we understand it, lifespans were much shorter, people were less educated, and they had fewer logistical capabilities? But yet somehow they pulled all this off. There were mathematicians everywhere. There were people that were focused on this. Why would anybody even build a structure like this from civilization in the way we understand it? You know, our entire civilization is based on economics, based on who has money and doesn't have money. And of course, the other explanation you see is, well, they just had a lot more money back then. How the heck did they have a lot more money back then? That doesn't make any sense either. Now, the gross national product, the economy was smaller back then. The number of people working on things and producing things, it was vastly smaller. So that doesn't make any sense. Now, of course, I'm sure you see it every day. There's all kinds of unique magic tricks done with economics every single day. We can make money appear where there is no money. We can say there's a different interest rate. And who's actually making all these decisions and giving all these orders? Well, nobody that we can see. But
yeah. And just sort of bringing in another aspect of this that I've had a couple episodes about now is this idea of free energy. The fact that these buildings, they all have these beautiful spires on top of them, that we're starting to ask questions, was this to generate free energy for the people? And there's lots of videos and, you know, people speculating about this out there, looking at these things and realizing, oh man, like even the Egyptian pyramids, people are asking now, were these energy systems? And so what are your thoughts on this idea that, you know, these giant buildings with all these huge spires, they all have very pointy tops. And also the cathedrals, it sounds kind of like cathode, like this, the energy system was used. So what are your thoughts on this? How would you explain this? Is another theory is coming into it, how all of these old world buildings had this free energy technology that was also hidden from us. And maybe we could like just get into that a little bit.
Well, free energy is the way that we look at things because, you know, in our mind, we would have a society that provides us with all of our basic energy needs. And we think of it as free energy, but perhaps that's the other element of this civilization that's completely different than what we think of. They didn't think of it as free energy. They just thought of it as, well, we're all one civilization. So in order to make the most efficient civilization, we're going to have this entire infrastructure developed and it's for everybody. But you might notice that we spend a lot of time, we're conditioned on the whole concept of economic systems. And therefore, well, that's a socialist system. That's a communist system. You know, we could never do that. We could never think of that. That doesn't make any sense. No one's making a profit off of that. You know, governments still have to operate on financial sheets, so nobody would ever do that. So we think of it as free energy. But maybe just maybe they had a system that didn't even involve finances. It didn't even involve what we think of as money. Now, it's not to say that it was some kind of, like I said, utopian system, but maybe it just operated very differently. And on the other hand, we do have some very negative connotations of it. You know, did they do things that were really crazy or dystopian, like hive cities? Sure. But did they have to have a means to really power all that, to really do all that? They had to have some means to do it, and that's what seems to elude us. Now, could they have generated energy? Absolutely. But could they have had even more purposes than just free energy? Did they also devote time to understanding of technologies and different means of existence that we don't even understand? Different means of pursuing personal health. Perhaps they had the ability to actually generate energy that went inside each individual. Imagine, for example, if you could replenish yourself with sustenance without actually having to eat. So maybe everybody, this is just an idea, just different theories. Everybody gathered in one of these cathedrals. There were no pews. They all just stood because they were only in there for 5 to 10 minutes. You know, it wasn't like what we think of where they have the 5-hour long mass from 1870 and people had to be poked with sticks to stay awake. No, they just went in there for 5 to 10 minutes, stood around, and the apparatus, the machine that these structures were part of, provided that energy that regenerated them. And if you're not eating and perhaps the bodies were more efficient, maybe that's the reason why, you know, and everybody always likes to obsess over the fact that there were no bathrooms around there, or they didn't have purpose-built bathrooms. But that's what it all boils down to. That's what it all comes from, that there were different means that these structures could have operated on, that they could have had a variety of different purposes that elude us, that we don't have any understanding of. I mean, we grasp for free energy because, well, that's what makes sense to us. We all need electricity to do what we need to do. But what if they had other capabilities? What if they actually had a balance between the individual and the society? I mean, let's be honest, we don't have much of a balance now. You do for the society, and yes, we might have some sort of system that's going to reward you for that, but is it?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point, is we are so deep into speculative territory here that we could not even be close to the amount of capabilities that were provided by this technology that they had. And I am hopeful that there are certain things that people are picking up and running with now, realizing that is very good and healthy for us, such as just simply grounding, just standing on the earth, which it's kind of hilarious when you put that in contrast with what we're talking about today, how people are just now realizing, oh man, when I get out of this box that I've been in, and just actually put my feet in the dirt or the ocean, I feel amazing. I just feel charged. I have all these electrons from the earth being run through my body, and scientists are actually studying how that is reducing inflammation in your body the second that you start doing that. And you can actually see your body physically changing as an electric unit. And so there's so many possibilities here that could have been done here. And it's really fascinating. And one of the questions that I am grappling with myself is when you look at all this and just puts into context how at this point I'm fully convinced without a doubt that right now that the state that humanity is in we are much lower in consciousness, health, and connectedness than we were in the past. And before really looking into Tartaria, I sort of sided with Graham Hancock, like, oh, it was 15,000 years ago. It's a really long time ago. But now Tartaria shows that this was really all the way up until a couple hundred years ago, potentially. And so it wasn't that long ago that this switched and that we lost this piece of our history. And I can't decide if this is a black pill or a white pill, because you can either look at it in one way of saying, wow, we are, you know, we fell so far from where we once were. But on the other hand, it's very optimistic, because we know that our potential is so much higher than where we're at. And if we're able to break these chains that are around us in the modern world, we can ascend back to that place, and we can get back to, you know, what we already know that we have done in the past as a species from these cycles. So what are your thoughts on that?
Well, you probably hit upon it right there. The most powerful idea behind all this is that there really are no limits on possibilities, that anything and everything becomes possible. You know, I mean, power generation is just the tip of the iceberg if you really think about this. What if you actually have a technology that really could renew the individual from a physical and, you know, I'll use the word spiritual, but you could also say ethereal presence, where your actual ability to project willpower is increased. Your ability to regenerate your body, your ability to increase your longevity. We have numerous accounts of people living longer in the past, and of course those will be dismissed and we'll simply be told that that was just myth and legend. No, there's no way people lived to 800 to 1,000 years old. That's just crazy things in religious texts that have been scientifically debunked. There's that word they love to use, debunk. It's been debunked. It's been debunked, which means don't ask any more questions and don't consider the possibility because it's been debunked. Although, oddly enough, when you look and see who does the debunking, it tends to be journalists who, remember, are not certified to tell the difference between a conspiracy and conspiracy theory, or library researchers, who, by the way, are not historians either. But they're the ones that they tend to point to and say, yes, they debunked this. It's very peculiar. And so there's always a catch to say, well, an actual historian didn't say this wasn't possible. An actual scientist didn't say this wasn't possible. It's very, very intriguing how it operates. But that idea, that optimism to realize that we really are capable of much more than we can even begin to imagine, then suddenly that opens up possibilities for us. And I mean, you can even see how expectation management has changed from just last century and this century. Look at a lot of our entertainment in the last century. We had a lot of optimistic shows that had us exploring new lands. Now, yes, they did it through the vehicle of space, but, you know, it doesn't matter because there's different ways and different methods of looking at things. Maybe we're part of some kind of multiple dimensional existence. Maybe there's something that we don't understand in terms of our own reality. And I mean, we love to say simulated reality. That's another catch-all to get it all. And maybe there's some possibilities in that. But we begin to grasp all these different possibilities, and it suddenly opens our minds that things might be a lot more greater than we could even begin to perceive, because it seems like everything functions to keep us very limited. Only care about your immediate concerns in the day, and we'll tell you what your greater concern should be. What's this trade war all about? What's this regional conflict all about? What are the tariffs all about? What's the latest tax increase? And it's always the same thing, and it's a revolving cycle of different things, and it doesn't really matter who the leaders are, because oddly enough, it just seems like I don't want to say playbook, but the same issues just keep coming up. We never really solve any problems. We just play whack-a-mole with issues, and, you know, the same issues that we handled 20 years ago, well, they'll come back. The Cold War kind of went away between East and West, but now it's back. So we've got to deal with it. Didn't really solve anything. It's almost as though our governments are incapable of solving problems long-term. Now, I know I shouldn't say that because, you know, we need government to solve problems. Short-term, of course. Now, long-term problems, maybe that's just beyond the purview or the capability of them. It's ultimately up to everybody to decide what to believe. But when you start to empower yourself as an individual, when you start to make your own decisions and see the world your own way, that, I dare say, is the most powerful possibility behind this perception of whatever you want to call this old world, because I'll let you in on something. It was around in the 20th century. You just had to call it a very different name. You called that civilization by a name that started with an A, but, you know, you don't call it that now. And you're not supposed to refer to it and make that connection now, because that was an ancient civilization. That's one of those ancient civilizations that Graham Hancock is alluding to. But no. There wasn't a civilization that was around 200-300 years ago. That is impossible. We have very well-documented sources. We have recorded history that we can't question that tell us that it was impossible. And that's what people will think. That's what they'll believe. Because it's unimpeachable, at least in their mindset.
Yeah, yeah. And this is, you know, just learning of the possibility, and I would say the consensus of the Tartaria researchers believe that this, and maybe you could correct me on this, you have a better understanding, you've heard more theories and you have your own, of what exact time frame most people are thinking of here as the most logical, you know, period that this Tartarian civilization existed. What do you believe personally, and maybe what is the consensus for, you know, how long this civilization that's been hidden from us was around, in your opinion?
Well, that's just it. There's a lot of different theories, and we just don't know. Now, there's some people who put a lot of strength of belief in their theories, and that's all right, but I personally don't believe we actually have the evidence to know. It's deprived of us. We have no way of knowing. So I am fully supportive of all the different theories that are out there. Some saying that it's 200-300 years ago. It was around 1850, or the year that we think of 1850. That was the last great reset where that civilization was destroyed. It could have been on that timeline. I have a theory called the Five Eras Theory, where I have three different key years for when that reset may have happened. It may have happened in 1850, 1800, or even before that, 1750. And it's also possible it could have happened a lot sooner than we realize, maybe as early as the 1900s, early 1900s, or the early 20th century. There's all kinds of evidence that supports it, but there's also evidence that goes against it as well and opposes it. So it's also hard to tell and evaluate the evidence itself, especially since there's been, how shall we say, a lot of erroneous information that for whatever reason is now in existence that was not present just 10, 15 years ago. A lot of erroneous information. And what's really legitimate and what's not? Well, the issue is I can't find a person and talk to them who actually witnessed the World's Fairs of Chicago in the 1890s, of St. Louis in the early 1900s. There's just nobody left alive to talk to. And even if there was, who actually went there? Because it's the other peculiar thing. There should be lots of people who could very easily oppose many of these opinions. But they don't directly. They're always referring to the same defaults. Well, it's very well documented. We have newspaper recordings. We have journalists that we trust who wrote about these things. Okay. Although if you want to see something odd, just look at some of the news reports from the United States anywhere, any newspaper from the 1850s, the 1860s. It doesn't exactly read in the way you would think. That's just one example.
Could you elaborate on that? How does it read that is suspicious?
Well, you know, it seems more like you're reading classifieds. That's what it oftentimes looks like. I mean, it's non sequitur. It's completely different than the way media is now. You know, the way the news operates, where we've got these headlines, and these headlines are to catch you, and then they follow on earlier headlines. Well, in the past, it didn't seem to work that way. The news seems very detached and disjointed. Now, is that legitimate news from that time frame, or is that something that was, how shall we say, published, edited, and modified and inserted later? Now, of course, anyone would say, well, that would only happen in a dystopian authoritarian civilization such as Oceania in the book 1984, where someone is modifying the past. But if you think about it, you don't need that kind of civilization, that kind of society to modify the past. The past is modified every single day. And ironically, Ken Burns, the guy who made the Civil War, even says it very openly. Well, how you judge a civilization is looking at how they view the past, because how they view the past will change with each passing day. Therefore, the past changes.
Yeah, definitely. And I'm curious, this is definitely one of the questions that people will be asking as they hear all this, is what evidence are we pointing to, the Tartaria believers, that the past was changed physically on these buildings that we keep talking about? And I know that a lot of people are talking about how the dates that are printed on them were simply manipulated at a grand scale across the world. What sort of things would you point to when that rebuttal comes out and says, oh, you know, but we have the date. It says established right here. It says founded right here, built right here. How do you really describe how that was changed to basically trick people?
Well, if you look at the cornerstone mentality that they have, so any major structure, they started with a cornerstone, a state capitol, a courthouse, a church, a cathedral, whatever. They always have this cornerstone story. Well, this is the cornerstone. It's the first thing we put down, although you'll find images that show that it clearly was not. And then they would inscribe the date on the cornerstone. But yet, curiously, when you look at a lot of these cornerstones, it seems like the date was inscribed at a different point in time. But then here's the other question that comes down. Why would anybody be inscribing years on cornerstones for structures that were not supposed to be built to last? If they were really built to last, then clearly they have a capability that we don't have now. And so it goes back to the whole headstone argument. Well, you know, what are the years that are actually on these headstones? Well, here's something else you can use to kind of question this. Guess what you don't ever see a year on? Roman coinage. Roman coins never have years on them. And yet that's supposed to be the primary civilization that everything's derived from. Now, what about these structures? For example, any state capitol, the Iowa State Capitol, yeah, it's got the year inscribed on it. Well, they tell us that at the Iowa State Capitol, they had to replace the cornerstone because the original cornerstone they put in there was too poorly constructed. It was too poorly made. So they had to replace it. They actually say that in the official history. How could you have a cornerstone that needs to be replaced in a structure that you built 1871 to 1886 that lasted today, but yet the cornerstone needed to be replaced 2 years into it? They even go so far as to say the whole thing was rickety and falling apart in the early 1900s, and that's why they constantly have to renovate it or renew it. You know, they use those terms a lot. But then you also hear, we couldn't actually tear down this building because it would be too expensive to tear it down. The most notorious example being the City Hall in Philadelphia. It would bankrupt the city to try to tear down the City Hall, even though we think of it as an eyesore. That's just one example. And so then that brings up the question, why did they leave so many of these structures standing that they could just easily tear down and completely remove any evidence of? Well, it seems that the capability to tear them down is lacking. Or there's another reason why they couldn't tear them down. Perhaps these structures are part of a much larger apparatus that we can't comprehend right now. But somebody knows that if they were to tear them down, it would cause apocalyptic effects in how this apparatus actually maintains the balance of our physical world right now. Those are just theories, but they all seem to be very distinct possibilities.
Yeah, definitely. And one of the things that you brought up there was this idea of the World's Fair. And these were, maybe you could just describe what these were in a nutshell, because this is essentially one of the, according to the theory, the ways that they basically made up the story that, oh, these were all just temporary built for these fairs, and they were meant to be torn down afterwards, even though there are these just incredible, amazing buildings, like you said, with they were inscribed with things that doesn't seem like it was temporary. So could you give us a little elaboration on what were the world fairs according to the official story and, you know, what we actually think they were for?
Well, the official story says that the world's fairs were expositions. For whatever reason, they started to highlight the Industrial Revolution. And so the Industrial Revolution, which, you know, has a very fluid date behind it, happened at this time or it happened at that time. You know, it's really hard to say. But the whole point of the World's Fairs were to showcase the capabilities of civilization at the time. And so as a result of that, with them showcasing the ability of civilization, it was to let people see how far the world had really come. But yet that's where it gets really, really odd, because there was really no reason to do this. There was no reason to put all this effort into all this. And you also have to realize you're talking about millions of people coming from all corners of the land to actually witness all this. And so that's where it really gets strange, is the stated purpose behind it doesn't make any sense. You have limited resources, and yet you're putting all this effort into putting on these grand expositions. And there you're seeing one of the examples right there. And those are the structures that they'll try to tell us, oh yeah, those were all temporary structures made out of stucco and things that just don't make a lot of sense. Does that really look like stucco? Does that look like balsa wood and plaster? and then how all these structures ended up. Well, yeah, they were temporary structures built in a very short amount of time. You know, you're looking at Chicago, that's Jackson Park right there. And so the official account is, yes, they put all this effort, they sank all this money into putting on what's supposed to be an exposition to celebrate Columbus's discovery of the Americas 400 years earlier. So it's not even the 500th anniversary, it's the 400th anniversary in 1893. They even go so far as to say it was delayed, it was supposed to be 1892. But because it took so long to build all these temporary structures, that's why it was delayed to 1893. And so even the official account of these World's Fairs, especially Chicago being one of the most notorious and well-known, it just doesn't make any sense. And what you'll see is these impressive structures. Now, a lot of the images that have come out with these World's Fairs, again, Chicago being the most well-known, have been very questionable. Alternative researchers have picked them apart for their lack of veracity. It's very clear that there's been modifications made to the images, that people have been drawn in or added. There's little details like flags that don't make any sense. And so suddenly it has you questioning the whole thing. Now, is that the design? Is it because they peppered in those images later? Who really knows for sure? But the reality is the Chicago World's Fair is, as they like to say, very well documented. It did happen, apparently, but what was it really about? And so that's where you really see a lot of the baseline theories for why there was all this impressive architecture that was still standing and had to be removed over time. Because guess what happened to all these structures after Chicago World's Fair? They were all destroyed in a fire. And that's the other thing you see. Fires that just happen all the place all the time. Fire here, fire there, a great fire, a wildfire, or a fire that tends to be very specific. It only strikes one building, as opposed to a fire that strikes an entire city or an entire wilderness area. If you look at the Peshtigo fire in Wisconsin, which happened coincidentally the exact same time as the Great Chicago Fire in the early 1870s. And they had to rebuild Chicago from scratch. But it was no problem. They did it in under 20 years. After they did that, then they put on the World's Fair in Chicago, the Columbian Exposition. You start to realize that all these things that they say that they're accomplishing and pulling off in a very short timeline in the past, with a reduced logistical capacity, is just crazy. It doesn't make any sense. And so whatever really happened, whatever really transpired at these World's Fairs, this is one of the keystone events that is very definitive evidence. Now, if you're looking for some evidence that you can actually go and look at, then yeah, just head to your local courthouse or your state capitol and try to explain how they did that. Go ahead and look at that cornerstone. Look at what they're telling you. Look at the little plaque that they have on the wall that says, yes, this was done by A, B, and C in 1872, and these are the architects. And usually people are satisfied with that. There's never any contractors listed. There's very rarely any famous workers or artisans, you know, all these artisans and craftsmen that people love to say were wandering all over the United States in the 1800s. But none of that is documented. So really, you see the World's Fairs, the expositions, they seem to be the real smoking gun, if you will, one of many. And that's why.
I just pulled up a couple of videos there for people to look at, for anyone who's watching visually, how, you know, these two great examples you just talked about. The World Fair was basically the way that they said, oh, yeah, it was just temporary, we're going to tear them down. And then there's all these great fires. And something that you talk about in your videos is you can basically pick any city you can think of and type in great fire after it, and you're going to find some historical great fire that has this ridiculous story behind it. And being from Seattle myself, I did this. I looked up Seattle Great Fire, and you might remember the year. I can't remember the year, but essentially it's the story that like a cow kicked over like a glue pot or something, and the whole city just goes ablaze. And all of these, you know, buildings made of stone just turned to rubble. And it's another thing that just doesn't make sense. That doesn't add up.
Well, I mean, you can find every ridiculous story you can imagine about these fires, whether it's a great fire or a fire that only afflicts a single building. I think it was Tomlinson Hall is the name of this incredible structure they had in Indianapolis, Indiana. And what they say is that a pigeon picked up a cigarette butt and dropped it on the building. And that's what caused the building to go up in smoke. I'm not kidding. That's what the official historical account says for why there's no impressive Tomlinson Hall anymore. The catacombs, the underground, are still there. And oh, by the way, there are catacombs in the United States too. But yeah, every crazy story you can imagine. Cow kicked over a pot, a pigeon picked up a cigarette butt, a guy fell asleep at the wheel and crashed his horse buggy into something and it caused a big fire. Or my favorite, St. Louis, they had a steamship that crashed into other steamships and set the whole city ablaze. And people will go nuts trying to attack you for even questioning that, no matter how ridiculous the story is. It's really kind of comical in my mind. Oh, yeah, of course a pigeon dropped a cigarette butt. Of course a steamship ran aground and set the whole city afire. It makes perfect sense. Everything was just doused in gasoline. Yeah, okay, whatever.
Yeah, it's really wild. And that's only part of it. So we have, you know, some excuses for the World Fair, some excuses for these great fires that are just melting everything into a pile of dust. It doesn't make any sense. And then there's, you know, I just pulled up that video there as well of, oh, and some of them they just destroyed. And for other excuses, name it, you know, what I think a common one is just they say, oh, this doesn't meet our new safety standard, so we need to tear it down for safety reasons. And there's just all sorts of different excuses flying around for why they're destroying these amazing, beautiful works of art that are more incredible than anything that we know how to make. And it doesn't take that much of a stretch for people to start questioning, you know, why would they actually want to do this? These stories clearly don't make sense. Why are they actually being erased from history? And so that's where you start asking yourself, who would actually benefit from destroying all of this beautiful architecture everywhere? And so where would you take that question when people ask it to you?
Well, the who is the very... It's the most important question you'd like to think. Who's really behind all this? But I think the issue is it's also the question that has the most amount of misinformation, because unfortunately, we as human beings have a nasty habit of wanting to go with a blame mentality. We're quick to blame anybody and anything, especially select groups of people. And if you think about how we're organized, we're organized with group dynamics in mind. And it doesn't matter what group we're talking about. You know, I mean, we can talk about any sort of difference you want to, everything from economic class, anything from national identity and skin color and the whole 10 yards, internal, external, every difference is emphasized every single day. And I hate to say it, there's a lot of alternative researchers that jump on that bandwagon. Oh, yes, you know, yes, this previous civilization was an example of some sort of superiority. And yet, oddly enough, if anybody was really superior, then shouldn't that civilization still be in existence to this day? And the fact is it's not. So, sorry, that derides your entire superiority argument. And by the way, there's also a way to disprove if someone is saying that a certain group is responsible for something because, okay, they say that you are not allowed to criticize those that are responsible for things. Then why is there somebody out there that's allowed to criticize that particular group, but then there's no repercussions for it? Then it means one of two things. If that group really is behind everything, then that person is controlled opposition for that group. But what it most likely means is no, they've just discredited the fact that that group is not behind anything and you really can criticize them. But that's just one example. You know, you can see that all the time. And of course, you can make arguments that it's all misinformation. Can you really see the wood from the trees? No. So who's really behind it? I suspect that it's somebody who's not even on the board, if you will. In other words, we have all these leaders, all these groups of people that we think are responsible for everything, but yet we always have fingers pointed to the same groups and the same people and nothing ever changes. So is that really the situation, or is it something that operates in a way that's completely different than we can even begin to imagine? So just think of it this way. Is it some sort of force that's really just a chess player that has no vested interest with what actually happens on the board, but they can control the actions? Is that one way to look at it? That may be one way to look at it. Is it some kind of ancient enemy that we can't even begin to perceive that operates completely differently, that may not even be human, that's some sort of hive mind? Yeah, once again, we like to throw around the AI boogeyman, but, you know, again, you don't really see any evidence of something that's artificially intelligent out there. At least if there is, it's nothing that we're allowed to see or perceive. And again, it could be something even way beyond that. Now, of course, we can go in the classic religious mentality of good and evil. But I think it's a lot more complicated than that, because I think that whatever this all is, it does reside within all of us as well. So who's really responsible for it? It seems to be that whatever power that is out there likes to keep things very, very fluid and likes to be able to change things on a dime. Because if you step back, you see these wildfires are still happening to this day. So it looks like we've learned nothing from all these city fires that happened in the 1800s and the early 1900s. It's still a problem today. And of course, there's reasons given for it. Well, the resources were diverted to this nation. We had irresponsible politicians because we believe that there are politicians that are going to protect us from other politicians. And so we're willing to suck all that up and accept all these explanations. And then we end up on this endless cycle of blaming and doubting. And yet, once again, nothing ever changes. So.
Yeah, and it's quite peculiar, I would say, how this idea of weird fires that just don't act naturally is not a new thing. And people are starting to question this now, as we saw in the Maui fires and the Los Angeles fires and these just crazy fires that are happening and just happen to be only burning certain places over certain high-value lands. And they never touch the blue roofs or the blue cars or anything blue, which is quite weird. And people are asking questions about, like, what's going on here? And this is sort of tied into another piece of the Tartaria theory, which is, you know, there could have been these sorts of technologies used for evil to actually just destroy these buildings as well. And I have no idea if you've even gone into that on your channel. I didn't see if you did or not, but I've seen some other channels talking about, you know, buildings being melted and the idea that a lot of what we think are mountains or these structures in nature are actually just melted buildings. And I'll try to go find some resources for that for people that want to look into it. Do you subscribe to that idea? And what are your thoughts on that?
Well, it goes in the distant past. I mean, I'm very open-minded to the idea that, yes, there are a lot of artificial structures out there that do appear natural, because on a long enough timeline, I mean, you can show that there are artificial structures that do look natural, especially with the passage of time. And were these much larger structures than we can even begin to imagine, that really were the size of mountains and were going way back in the distant past, much earlier eras where we had this capability? Yes, I think there's a lot of likelihood that that is possible. Now, were they melted by some sort of artificial or natural force? Possible. Was it a combination of things? Have these structures or the remnants been through multiple catastrophic events? That's what we're trying to ascertain. Was it some sort of plasma fire? Was it a plasma fire? And then in another reset, there was a great flood. So imagine you have this structure, we'll just say the Tower of Babel structure that reached all the way up to the sky. Well, what did it go through? It went through a plasma fire. It went through a flood. It went through a mud flood. Well, what's going to be recognizable of that structure after that amount of time then? No matter how large and amazing and impressive it was. And so suddenly it becomes very possible. But if you want to find an example of, colossal engineering that endures to this day, look at all of the coastlines and look at how artificial they look. Look at things like Giant's Causeway. Look at the areas where there's beautiful, quote-unquote, natural bays that just fortuitously formed. I mean, maybe they did. Or maybe we just want to go back to divine intervention. That's the explanation for all this. Maybe. But yet there's an odd amount of coastlines that look very artificial, very symmetrical. You know, it's funny, if you ever saw the movie Prometheus, which... And it wasn't exactly the best of films, but there were some interesting ideas in it before the plot went all haywire, such as when they talk about, well, God doesn't build in straight lines. They very clearly say that in that film. Coincidentally, right after they fly across a peak that's taller than Mount Everest. But despite having all these capabilities for special effects, how many films do you see ever attempt to try to depict mountains that are taller than Mount Everest? You know, just those little things that you try to think about. We have the ability, with computer-generated imagery, or AI as we call everything now, to really make these kind of landscapes. But for some reason, we don't. We don't want to try to envision what an alien landscape looks like where we have mountains that are that tall. It's just one of those things. You start to see the limitation on creativity and imagination, and that's really what's been different between the previous century and this century. Because now we just recycle a lot of ideas, and they're just derivative ideas now. You know, how many more incarnations are we going to see of the main science fiction series until we're blue in the face or drinking blue milk and hoping we don't have to watch any of them? And yeah, it does all matter because it's controlling our ability to imagine things and to conceptualize things. Yeah, great example right there.
Yeah, and I just threw on this film that I found during my research a little while ago called The Tartarian Meltdown on Rumble. And this is one I remember goes through a lot of these just bizarre looking structures that sure could be, you know, like, look, he's pointing at the background, that mountain there. Like, was that just another structure that just got more melted by this mysterious force? And, you know, why are these buildings being built into the mountains? And I feel like I've seen these before in my travels. Of course, I didn't have the eyes to really understand it, but a lot of these weird structures that are like inside buildings in a way, and it just doesn't make sense how that would, you know, be done. Like, why would you build something inside a rock that'd be so hard? It makes more sense that there's like melt on top of it that's coming down over the building later. And that's a whole crazy, you know, different idea, but there are just so many things out there that we look at with different eyes when we realize that we have been, you know, there have been so many cycles of these cataclysms, and there's different ones out there possible. Like we talk about the mud floods that, you know, bury a lot of the buildings like we talked about earlier. And there could just be these some evil technology out there that melted all these buildings down and turn them into what we call mountains now. And we don't even see them anymore because they've been so destroyed. And it's easy to just kind of get off the rails a little bit and just think like, man, you can't look at anything the same way anymore after you start thinking about this. And I, for one, just am starting to look at like all sorts of different artifacts with different eyeballs now and just thinking, you know, was this part of an old civilization that's just been so changed over time? And it's really fascinating. I would say it certainly expanded my brain on what's possible about history, but it's crazy. It's really crazy. How does this change the way that you view the world, like going through this rabbit hole and learning about all of these things?
Well, it's simply understanding that there's a lot more possible in the world than you've been led to believe. I mean, people easily discredit things and they'll try to say that, oh no, that, you know, like what you're looking at right there, it's a natural structure. It was just wind and erosion in a long enough timeline. Well, I'll give you one of the classic examples. If you want to find the best examples of natural and artificial blending together, look at Cappadocia in Turkey. Look at Ukasar Castle, a structure that they say is very clearly an artificial structure, but it looks very natural. They admit it's a castle. But then they try to say that all the surrounding terrain features are natural. And that's where you actually have the doors and the windows and everything that's really carved out in it. It's really crazy.
Yeah, there's so many things to look into. And for more on this, I would obviously recommend go to your YouTube channel, because this is what you do. You're going through all this stuff as well. And man, I think that maybe we could start thinking about wrapping things up here, since we've given people a lot to think about. And are there any specific resources that you would throw out there other than your own channel that would, like, maybe any books or, you know, other things to follow that would help people sort of put all these pieces together that we've talked about today and start forming their own opinions and thinking critically about this crazy idea of this civilization that was completely erased from history?
Well, you know, that's the really problematic aspect of it, because getting anything published that openly questions this and tries to provide a guideline for it, it is problematic at best. And, I mean, you're limited in how you can present it. You can present it as some basic evidence that all these structures that we have weren't really built in the way that we think they were. You'll find books on that. But what I would really suggest everybody to start doing is really just go and look around and pay attention to your immediate environment and find those structures that don't make sense. Really look, and you'll find them. They're everywhere, wherever you are. Look at your local church. Look at your local county seat, your courthouse. Your state capital is always a good one. Or wherever else you are in the land, you know, whatever divisions of government you have, you'll find those community buildings that are just all too well constructed. look at the date behind them, really go and visit them. Pay attention to every single detail. And you could even live out on a farm, you know, in the middle of New York or in the middle of Iowa or in the middle of Australia, and try to explain the foundations of that farm. Something that was built 150, 200 years ago. Does that make any sense? Really start asking those questions. And then how you try to put it all together in your mind? Well, really, that's entirely up to you. And yes, you can find plenty of people that'll try to pull you in a certain direction. And maybe that's the direction you want to go, but that's ultimately up to you to decide on. But I would encourage everybody just to start exploring their own environment. Don't rely on the pictures solely. I mean, use them as a guideline, sure, but really get out there and really look at these structures, interface with them. Knock on the walls, knock on the bricks, knock on the cornerstones. Determine if there is a difference that you can perceive in the construction material. Ask yourself, can bricks like that be made today, that our community hall that was built in 1857, that's still standing in perfection today, could be built out of today? Because even with all these fires, all this destruction, so many of these structures are still standing to this day. And they stand in total perfection. As opposed to your house that was built in 2012, and you already have to have the siding on it redone. You already have to have a new roof done. Or you can buy one of those new lovely modular homes or one of those container revival style homes that's basically a train car, and you know, yeah, go with that. It's probably more structurally sound than the homes that we're building now that we're doing 30-year loans on. I'm not encouraging that, but it's just a way to think of things, a way to think of durability and endurance in construction, and really try to explain it. And if people could do it in the 1800s with reduced logistical capacity, no heavy machinery, then why the hell can't we do it now? And if you want to accept this, well, because there was all this manual labor back then. Okay, sure. You know, you realize that you're just accepting things without actually questioning things.
Love it. Absolutely. And I would also just add, you know, when you're looking at these things, trying to understand how it was made, keep in mind that the technology that we supposedly had at this period when they're supposed to be built, because like we sort of started with, just when you see the visual of a horse and buggy next to this massive, beautiful, amazing structure, it starts to make sense in your brain that doesn't actually logically make sense when you stop and think about it. So that is the where to start. And I would also recommend people go to Lucius's channel, his YouTube channel, where you can literally look up your own city in here, and he'll probably have a video on it because he has tons of videos. I just pull up your channel right now. You have over 400 videos going through all these different cities. And like you said, just asking questions. And this is what really people need to be doing. And no one can fault you for that. And if they are, then they're probably not having your best interest in mind, because we need to be asking more questions about anything right now. And that's the whole reason why I started this podcast, so we can bring up more new questions. So I hope this has made everyone think of some new questions to start asking. Lucius, really, really appreciate you coming by today. This has been an awesome conversation. I am going to include all sorts of links in the description for people to go dig into more, including all of Lucius's links to his socials. I know you're on YouTube, Twitter, TikTok. Is there anywhere else people could follow you to learn more about this?
Those are the main locations for me. And certainly I encourage everybody to look into whatever explorers or, you know, there's plenty of them. There's many other channels that look at it, you know, and come to your own conclusions, because ultimately it's an individual journey. That's where it has to start. That's what I'm all about. I mean, as long as people are asking their own questions and coming to their own perceptions, their own theories, and we have an understanding and a tolerance for the different theories, that's really where I believe we need to go. You know, we've already seen the same pattern of, well, this person doesn't know what they're talking about, and I just negate their theories, or I don't like them, and so that's that. But yet, that's the same pattern that we seem to be encouraged to go on. I mean, I'll look at Graham Hancock's theories. I think there is some validity behind them. But does it really seem like we're being pushed in a certain direction? Yeah, it does kind of seem that way. So, you know, you just have to maintain your own vigilance on everything. You have to ask these questions. Does somebody want me to know this? Does somebody want me to think this? So maybe I should step back and really think if that's true. It may well be true. The mainstream history may be true in places, because as they always say, half-truths are the best lies. But there might be something completely different that we don't understand. Don't be afraid to question it, and don't be reluctant to try to put it together in different ways that make more sense in your mind. That's where it all starts.
I love it. Yeah, and I agree. Anytime anything is being pushed out on Netflix, I'm immediately skeptical. And it does seem sort of like this could be sort of a fallback that, you know, these quote unquote evil forces are trying to hide all this stuff from us. Could just be so letting things slip out that say, oh yeah, this was 15,000 years ago, so think about this, when really a much bigger story, a much more vast story that only ended a couple hundred years ago is actually right in front of our nose. So it's just worth looking into for everyone and questioning everything, and also just understanding how, as you look and start to witness all these things, ask questions about these things, it teaches you much more about yourself too, as a human being, as a piece of this story. And I think that's a great way to end it. I appreciate you so much for coming by, Lucius, and I look forward to keeping in touch.
Oh, well, thanks for the invitation. Take care of yourself.
I'm a conspiracy theorist. Of course I collect old books. And here's some things in these books that make me question the narrative. Pictures of magnificent buildings, not just built in the United States, but built all over the world. And you want to tell me that these buildings were made with horse and buggy, hammer and chisel? Okay. Journal entries depicting cities constructed with large bells. Now, in the early 1900s, when they got rid of all the bells, was it really because they needed metal for the wars, or was it because of something else entirely? Many mentions of a people called the Tartars, and discussions of Tartarian matters. We were taught that the sun never set on England, but in reality, the sun never set on the Tartarian Empire. Why don't they want us to know this?
There's an energy all around us. The free energy. Energy of the atmosphere. And it's been called many other things. Chi. The nature's energy. A lot of things. But many people refer to it as the aether. And in the 1800s, many books were written on this mysterious fluid, as they called it. Now, some people say they were referring to electricity, but many others will point to places like these stupas, as they called them. And you look at these ornate rods that come off the top, and to be told that these were purely ornamental, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. In modern times, we would say that might be a lightning rod or something to that effect, because that's pretty much the only thing comparable. But in a way, they are much like lightning rods, because lightning rods in the 1800s were used for the same purpose as these stupas, to collect the atmospheric energy. There's just so much to this whole thing. How do they work? Why do they work? Are we going to see churches are of the same effect as stupas? And there's many buildings around the world purely built to harness this energy from the atmosphere. And it's all been covered up. Do you remember when the world was free? Well, how about when the energy was free as well? Everything was taken from the atmosphere and drawn into these buildings, to these pylons, and many different things. And it was the aether that powered everything. And one day, the controllers of this world decided to take it away. They reset the population. It was in every country. Just keep watching these photos, and you'll see that everything was conductive. Everything had a way to tap into this energy, whether it be the obelisks, or the towers, or the cathedrals. Everything you look at, it interacted with the nature of the earth, the energy of the earth. It was a beautiful thing.